just a few days ago, I realized that this is the 100th episode on the podcast channel. So part of me just can't believe that we're already at 100 because it's, I guess, been now almost 2 years, or it has been 2 years and a month or so since I started this podcast channel. And to be very frank, it's gotten a lot more traction than I expected when I started it in 2017, but I'm really glad it did because I've enjoyed all the interactions with people. So a big thank you to all the listeners, a big thank you to everyone that's reached out to me, given me ideas for topics, introduced me to some good people around town to come on the show. So thank you. So please keep reaching out with requests, with ideas, with other guests, and just to connect in general. Like, I really enjoy networking. So as you know, this is one of the few podcasts out there that does not have ads and annoying sponsorships. I do that because, frankly, I hate those ads, but I also get way more benefit from the podcast by networking, getting deal flow, and also getting new clients than I would some advertising money. With all that said, I do have one favor to ask you. Please go to your favorite podcasting app, leave me a 5-star review. It would mean a lot to me. All right, so thank you, and now on to the show. So today we were talking about some Colorado landlord new tenant laws. It's a good one.
You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, Chris Lopez here. Welcome back to another episode. Today we are talking about the four new laws that the Colorado legislature passed this past spring session. So I have Anne-Marie Sunday from the Legacy Property Management Group with me here today to give us the rundown on them. So Anne-Marie, welcome back and thanks for coming over.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So I know before we jump into anything, we're talking laws. You're not a lawyer. We got disclaimers to go through.
Yeah. So let's talk about just a second.
Let's get the boring stuff over with.
Yeah. I'm not an attorney. Did I say I'm not an attorney? And I'm the messenger. I didn't vote these in. But I was participating on Capitol Hill this spring with some of my attorneys, as well as writing to my representatives, my congressmen, to try to kind of combat. We did win a little bit, and we can talk about what we won and didn't win, depending on what side of the coin you're happy about or not happy about.
Well, I think, I know for me, like, the biggest one I was worried about was that rent control or whatever. They weren't calling it rent control, but it was basically the rent
stabilization.
Control. Yeah, that thing. That's
the politically correct way to say rent control.
Is that the PC way?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Apparently, for Colorado. It did not pass. Interestingly enough, it wasn't that it didn't pass, so it will be back next year. It didn't have enough votes in the House to get to the next level to be on the ballot.
Okay. So it's still...
So we really actively campaigned against rent control, rent stabilization for Colorado. And we will do it again next spring because honestly, that is not a good scenario for anyone, even though it would behoove people. We could get into a long dissertation as to why it's not great. It would behoove people to really investigate why that just isn't working well in California because they are in rent control.
Yep.
State.
And I've seen those areas and there's stark differences. And I think, I can't remember the name, I think it was a Stanford study. I read one study, I think it was from Stanford, and they went through it all and they concluded it was not good. Like, it sounds good, but it's not good practically.
It isn't.
For the landlords or the tenants.
Or the tenants.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So, well, that's worrisome. That's still on the ballot, but thank you and your lawyers and for actually out there actively campaigning. So we appreciate that. So let's jump into these laws because I imagine as a property manager, you got some updating of leases to do and make sure everything's in line, right?
Yeah, and I'm going to just say, and we'll reiterate this at the end, if you want kind of the short and dirty version of this PowerPoint and my spiel on it, there is a 9-minute YouTube video on my website, which we can kind of show you where to get to that later. But I would really encourage, if you are managing yourself as a self-manager and or you are using a property manager, it is imperative that you are being protected. So these laws apply to whether you are a self-manager or whether you're a property manager. This is it. And these are now effective statewide. A lot of people think they're Denver. It's a state. Most of these are all statewide. They are now as a law. The governor has signed them in.
And they're already, so they're active.
Yeah, some of them are starting like August 2nd and they kind of transition. I may have some dates for us when we go through them, but for the most part, for the example, the warranty of habitability is an August 2nd start when we get into it.
Okay, so we can basically assume they're starting or in the near future,
you got
just
about
assume.
A month.
Wow. Not much time to get things in a row.
So there is verbiage that needs to change within your leases. For if you are a client of Legacy Property Management, you are absolutely being covered at this point for protection for us as well as our owners.
Sounds good. All right, so let's jump into the laws. And I'm going to slide the keyboard over you to Amory so you got the PowerPoints here.
Okay, so the first one is application fees. And again, I just stated that this really is across the board. It's not just for property managers. And it really has no relevance if you own one condo, one single family home, and you rent that out. It doesn't matter the size of the company, i.e. property management company, or the size of your portfolio, the law applies to you. And there are a couple of caveats. So let's just look at what this law is doing now. This law, just by way of notice, is effective immediately. So you should be, let's talk about this. This law limits the amount that can be charged for the application. This law came into effect because somebody decided that it was okay to charge someone $500 for an application fee. And that someone decided to pay $500. I don't know why they would have done that. But nevertheless, here we are with a new law.
So that was a snowball that started this?
That's what started it.
Huh.
So this requires disclosure of all fees that you are charging. So for example, us, we charge $45. We have to justify where that $45 is going. And it requires receipts for applications. Now, for us, all of our applications come through our property management software, so it's automatically receipted when they use their credit card. But for owners that are doing this, hey, you hand a paper application, someone gives you a check for whatever amount you're charging an application fee for, you need to give them a receipt. That is now part of this law.
And when you say you have to disclose the fees, do you have to like give a breakdown? So you charge $45, so $15 goes to credit check,
correct.
$20 goes to this.
Correct.
And that's just on the application itself?
Mm-hmm.
Huh, okay.
So what we do is we have in our system, it's the famous disclosure before you sign anything and give us, you know, your social. There's a bunch of stuff, which I'm sure nobody reads, but it's there. And this is where we are disclosing how we are using the $45. And I'm going to tell you why that's important that you disclose it, because there's a couple of things that are required in this law. This law requires specific actions when applications are denied. So you no longer can say, hey, sorry, you didn't meet our requirements, you're denied. You have to literally follow up, and it requires actions, i.e., and we may have talked about this, the denial letter, because you've pulled a credit. This is actually regulated by the Federal Trade Commission when you pull someone's background. So you must deny them appropriately. I recommend not doing that letter by yourself. I recommend there is loads of template tenant rejection letters on the internet. Get one of them that would be issued. I use the one that's actually issued by the FDC and the credit bureaus.
Okay.
It requires you also, this bill, to refund any of your unused portion of that application fee. So if you didn't use $5, you got to give it back now.
And so you're supposed to track for each application fee that you spent X amount here. Oh, we got $3 left over, refund it?
Correct.
Okay. Sounds like kind of a
lot
pain
of
in the
paperwork.
Butt.
Oh. So obviously you can see it doesn't make sense to charge. That you are not going to make money off of an application fee. Let's just put it that way. Charge what you really need. You know, usually to run a full background check, it's probably about $20. This law also limits the information that can be considered when processing. So here is where it gets a little more sticky for most people. And that is because we can no longer, I don't know if the audience is familiar with, we have 7 protected classes. Within the state of Colorado, income is now a protected class. Okay, so there's actually 8. In Boulder, there's actually another protected class, and that's sex orientation. But with regard to this law, you can't consider where people are bringing in their money, how they are getting. If I say I can pay $2,800 in rent a month, and I show you that I can pay $2,800, you can't evaluate me based on how I'm bringing in that money.
Does that
include... is to protect the subsidized housing people.
Okay, that was okay? my question.
So if part of my $2,800 is coming from subsidized housing, that is no longer a consideration. And I know tons of questions are going, what if I'm not subsidized housing qualified? I can talk to you about that in just a second. This law also excludes rental and credit beyond 7 years. This means that you cannot evaluate someone and deny someone beyond 7 years of rental or credit history. So you are looking 7 years and current. And for criminal, it's 5. And there are some exceptions. So definitely get yourself familiar with what this bill has been passed. But and again, for those that are wondering, sex offenders are not protected. So they are one of the exceptions. But this really changes the way you are evaluating and being able to deny people applying for your properties.
So as a property manager, what's your, what impact do you think this will have on landlords and owners?
So, you know, for us, we have the majority of our portfolio. The majority of our portfolio doesn't impact hugely on this because we tend to stay number one in single family homes and number two in higher rental, higher rent districts, so to speak. We do have some properties that qualify for subsidized housing. And so we do get people with Section 8 vouchers asking, is this Section 8 approved? You may not now say, this is not a Section 8 property. This I can't, we do not accept. What you can't say is, I can't accept a Section 8 voucher. That is not something you can say. So then the question is, well, what if I'm not a Section 8 property?
Yeah, that's going to create issues.
So let's say I have a voucher and I really want your property at $2,200. We were just talking about a property like this. And so I cannot be denied to go see that property. So I look at it and say, yep, I really, really want this home. So then I go to the subsidized housing and to apply for a voucher for your property.
That's specific to my property.
Correct.
Okay.
So then you get a call and say, we have an application for a voucher for your property. We're going to send an inspector out to see if you qualify for a Section 8 property. Now, when the inspector comes and you don't, you got bigger issues than the Section 8 renter. Because if you don't pass a Section 8, you've got habitability and issues. Now you've been tagged within the system. So now you are going to be required to fix problems in your home that you were allowing to let slide. Because subsidized housing can be even more stricter than the warranty of habitability, although we will talk about how warranty of habitability has become pretty strict. However, let's say you do approve, you've just become a Section 8 property and you've got yourself a voucher. And so the reason for denial on that would have to be something completely different at that point.
Okay, that's interesting. I did not know that was one of the new laws with this.
Well, it opened up a whole lot of people being able to get into homes. And this is because of the rents are going so high that people couldn't get into properties. And so that's all this law is really starting to assist with.
Yeah, I don't know. When I thought it was just the application fee. So this has a whole deeper thing on here.
Well, there's bills. The bill that we're talking about when you can't say... I'm not Section 8 approved. We don't take Section 8. That's protecting the income bill, which we're not going to talk about today. That's not one of the 4 laws. That bill has already been passed. That was passed last year. But that bill is directly related to assisting subsidized housing.
And that was Colorado or just Denver?
That was Denver. It's now statewide.
Okay, now it's statewide. Mm-hmm. Okay.
To my knowledge, we treat it as if we don't go in and out of counties at this point. There's too much gray in all of this. Yeah. And by the way, I want to say to you, even the attorneys say there's a lot that has to be worked out before this is all finished. Before this is all done, and they didn't really think it all through, type of thing. So there's going to be a lot of gray area for a little bit.
Okay. So do you have any? Because I mean, I see a problem, a potential problem. So you get the tenant, and they say, "I'm, you know, subsidized housing." They go to the local housing authority. They call you. That doesn't happen in a day or two. By the time they contact them, they call you. They send an inspector.
No,
I would imagine.
It doesn't. Interestingly enough, I was just in a fair housing class, and a gal that works in the Aurora subsidized housing was in the class, and she says, you'd be surprised how fast it can happen now, because there are so, these subsidized housing voucher people are actually, she was very defensive. They're very good people for the most part, and they can't find housing. And so, and it's because people keep saying, I don't accept Section 8. And so we just have to be really careful as licensed agents. That is not part of our verbiage anymore. But I don't know all the ins and outs. It would definitely be something for you to have a conversation with your attorney on how you are managing that.
Wonderful. Okay.
Okay. So the next one that passed is bed bugs. I thankfully have only had one property that had bed bugs. It was an absolute nightmare. But the law that is impacted now specifically has a few things. So let's say you get a call and you're notified by the tenant that they think they might have some bed bugs. So the law states now you have 96 hours and the clock starts once you've received the notification from the tenant. You have to now find a qualified inspector. You can't just go to Home Depot, grab yourself a bed bug kit and try to figure out how you're going to do it. It's 96 hours to find a qualified inspector. He needs to report findings to the tenant and to you. And you have to treat to eradicate. And all of that is on the landlord's expense. It doesn't matter how it happened. Doesn't matter who did it. Doesn't matter how they're living. It is at landlord's expense now.
So I fortunately have never experienced bed bugs, but do you have any idea what the cost of a qualified inspector is and what's the range of eradicating bed bugs?
I do not know what the inspector cost is. I do know that, so in my circumstance, I had one condo that got bed bugs from the neighbor. So he was a hoarder. And the bed bugs came through. There were 8 units in this condo building. I managed one of the 8 units. It was a mess. They had to fully tent the entire building. And the way to get rid of bed bugs is to cook them. And you have to do this several times because the eggs are untouchable. So it's every time it hatches, they're doing it again. So I think they tented it twice or 3 times. I don't remember. But each time we had to put tenants in a hotel to get this taken care of. It was a mess. It was ridiculous.
And how is that, like, a week process, 2 week?
No, it's a 24-hour tent.
Okay.
It's quick. I think that each owner was charged about $900. So times 8 units. That was each time we had to bake them. But that was a couple years ago. So I don't know, but, it's apparently because this made it they made a bill for it. There must be a real issue with bed bugs. And I'm very thankful that I'm not having to deal with that very often.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, you knew kind of what started the past law. You don't know what started this one rolling?
No.
Cause this seemed...
I think what started it was they were doing the self-treatment way. Going to Home Depot, the problem that you find is, like in our circumstance, they just move. I mean, it's like no other bug. They just move to the next unit. And if you don't fully occupy, if you're not fully owning the entire building, you're just going to have that rampant problem going through every unit.
So if I, this, I never thought about it from this scenario. So if I own a condo and, you know, whatever, there's 8 units in there and I'm on the top right and the guy on the bottom left gets bed bugs, I guess they have to tent the whole building then.
They tend to, yep, they tent the whole building.
And I'm helping to pay for that most likely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
There is a checklist. I didn't bring it, but there's an entire checklist that goes along with this bill. Same with the warranty of habitability, but it behooves you to get the checklist if you get a report on bed bugs and just start going through the checklist to ensure that the key thing here is the 96 hours.
Okay.
So this is the biggie, the warranty of habitability. I don't know if anybody knew, but Colorado has had a law of habitability. I think it's about 11 or 12 years old. But this new law extends the current one. So the habitability law did not go away. It just actually expanded. And what it did was it expanded the tenant's rights within the warranty of habitability. And this is where most owners, property managers are going to squirm. It made me squirm. So first, let's just really define warranty of habitability. This means as landlords, property managers, you are required to provide a habitable property to a tenant. So, you got to have running water, you got to have heat. Surprisingly to most tenants, AC is not included in the warranty of habitability, even though they think they're going to pass out from heat. It's not as part of the habitability law as we stand today. You got to have things that most you would think of to make the house livable, okay? So this new rule now expands what those requirements are. They kind of are calling, there's a long list of things. Get the list. I think it's like the 505 list or something like that, that applies to warranty of habitability. But it expands those requirements and reduces the leverage of a property manager or landlord when you have to fix them.
What do you mean by that?
Okay. So let's do an example. And I want to say this rule is really complex. Okay. So there's going to be a lot of question in people's minds. Here it is. Expands, requires specific responses from the landlord within a specific time frame. So the second bullet point. So let's go through this. I call my landlord or my property manager and I say, I think I might have mold. Okay. Mold is now part of the warranty of habitability. It wasn't before. It is now. Within 24 hours, I must respond. Okay, so let's say I get that call on Friday night at midnight. I got 24 hours to do the following. 24 hours. Okay, so the response must indicate what my intent is as an owner or landlord or property manager on how I'm going to remedy this condition. Okay, I don't even know what's going on yet, right? And I got to provide an estimate of when the remediation will begin, still within 24 hours. So I got to respond, acknowledge. I have to respond by what the intent is. I have to give an estimate of when it will begin, and I have to give an estimate of when it will be completed, all within 24 hours. I don't even know, is it, something I can wash the walls? Or am I relocating a tenant because we've got to tear down to studs? We have no idea. And I got to get some contractor out there to help me get this. And I don't even know contractors. So this is one where a lot of people are up in arms about. Me too, because it doesn't seem realistic. But it is currently been signed in effective August 2nd. So there's a lot of intricacies in this. This law also has a huge checklist. The way we are covering this right now is when we get a maintenance request that comes in, we immediately, our entire office is emailed when a maintenance request comes in the proper way, which would be through their portal because it emails everyone. And our system automatically acknowledges the receipt of it. But we take it one step further and we typically will acknowledge that we've receded and we're talking, or this is our plan. If it's nothing to do with the warranty of habitability, we have just made it a practice to acknowledge that we have the maintenance request in-house. If it has to do with habitability, then of course we're following these issues. I don't really have the mold issue, thank goodness. But big ones, if you've got a water issue, you know, and you don't remedy it, you could be having mold. Mm-hmm. So, you know, water and heat are two of the big ones for Colorado. Well, certainly heat, but, you know, those are areas. And then if you have, we've talked about this, one of the things in the habitability law is security. So not having secure windows that are locking or secured, that's a big deal. And you just have to be prepared that tenants are going to be aware of this law as well.
So, and you said, sorry, you mentioned mold was a new thing. Are there other issues that are now covered under this?
No, mold is, there are other issues.
Okay.
So like they have added a working refrigerator and a working oven must be on, that's just right off the top of my head. I can think that wasn't typically part of warranty of habitability. That is now part of this new law. So they have added things within the home that must be habitable or operational for tenants. And so, you know, you got a broken refrigerator. I'll tell you right now, there isn't an appliance company that can get out there in 24 hours.
Yeah. So when
you can't even get a delivered anything in 24 hours.
When it says respond in 24 hours, does that mean respond back to the tenant or respond back with a...
Respond to the tenant. Give them, in a mold issue, or respond back to the tenant, you've receded their complaint or their issue. You are now, this is what your intent is for remedying that condition. This is the estimate of when it will begin, and this is the time it will be completed. So let's say we have a broken refrigerator. You're going to try to either get an appliance guy out there to repair. I will caution you, most of the time, those appliance people, it's a part that has to be ordered, and a refrigerator is a big deal. I guarantee you, if there's not a second refrigerator in that house, you will get a bill for all the food that they lost. It has happened to me, because not every house has a garage fridge or a basement fridge. So just something to be aware of.
So the landlord can be responsible for the food gone bad?
Uh-huh. I've had owners actually just it's one of those things where you could fight it. We have fought it if there's a second refrigerator, but if there's not a second refrigerator, they will offer, you know, $100, $150 to compensate for the food that was lost. It's better than sitting in court.
Oh, no, I agree. I'm just trying to think. I mean, I've lived in places I've rented and I've owned, and refrigerators have gone out, and you just grab a cooler and ice and you deal with it.
Yeah.
But, okay.
I would love it if they would do that. I mean, obviously, the law doesn't say you have to pay for food.
Yeah.
But it's just been my experience of just sometimes it's just better to not... It'll cost you more to fight over $150.
Well, you're being
bucks.
Pragmatic. And mm-hmm. Yeah. No, yeah. I totally agree with that. I was just surprised that tenants can and do that, but okay.
This also gives a little more. There's a big discussion about withholding rent. So this bill now allows tenants to legally withhold their rent or not pay if it is a habitability issue. So this is when I say this is pretty complex. You would want to get with your attorney on understanding the law. But if you're not going to remedy it, then the tenants are allowed to remedy it. Okay. If you have to relocate a tenant, so let's say it is a big mold issue and you got to get those tenants out for safety purposes. So you place them in a hotel and you're paying for the hotel. If you as the owner are doing that, they must continue to pay rent in full. They don't get to take rent off too or take the hotel off. You know, sorry you had to get relocated, but we are putting you up into a like property or two, a hotel until this is remedied. Hotel goes on the landlord expense. Rent stays with the tenant. Again, I would read the bill for sure. Okay, so this is a big one, the 10-day cure. Let's talk a little bit about, you may have heard, and I think we talked about this on one of our podcasts, about the 3-day demand for compliance or possession. Okay. 3 days is no longer. This is one of the ones that we had impact when the bill was coming up. This started out in the House as 14 days. It was going to go from 3 days to 14 days, and we got them down to 10. And it was brutal. So let's just kind of go through the scenario. Tenant doesn't pay rent. You post what we used to call a 3-day demand for possession or compliance. And it states that the tenant has 3 days to pay the rent or we can potentially begin the eviction process. So with this, it's now a 10-day. There are a couple of caveats. So the example here is if you own a single family home and you don't own too many of those and the bill doesn't state what quote unquote too many are.
No, it actually uses the language too many?
Well, we
or
don't.
Something.
Yeah, something to that effect. So if you don't have a large portfolio and it has to be single family. So if you own condos or apartments or anything like that, you're a multifamily, you're automatically 10-dayer.
So even condos are considered multifamily in this.
Correct. It has to be a single family home and then it can't be too many. Then you could be a 5-dayer. For us, we are all going 10-day across the board.
Just to keep it simple and be safe, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a discrepancy and discussion. Well, what if you manage with a property management company? They have a portfolio. It's by owner. So theoretically, we could do a 5-day. But I think what's...
I'm sure that's something you would love to track in between
That's why we're doing 10-day. In my years of... I've done 3 evictions. This is not something that's a regular occurrence. I can't say... I have posted before several times and it scares my tenants enough to get with it. But what's interesting about this is... You can't think in terms of 3-day demand. So this is applicable to rent demand if they haven't paid rent. It's applicable to the demand for compliance for non-monetary violations. This would be like an HOA violation or a lease violation or something that you want to evict them on. And it's also for repeated violations. It's 10-day. So I will tell you, this does not state in my... Let's talk about this. In my lease, I don't have what we call, I literally do not use the word grace period. Grace period means if rent is due on the 1st, you have a grace period of 4 days sometimes, so it's late on the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend you not use the terms grace period because in that time, you literally couldn't post. So for my lease, rent is due on the 1st and what it states is late fees begin on the 5th. It doesn't say anything about... So I could theoretically post on the 2nd if I wanted to. With the new 10-day, I love that I don't have a grace period because now if they're not paid by the 3rd, I'm probably going to post. And the reason this slide's important is our attorneys are telling us now that the soonest the court date we could get into would be the 22nd of the month, even if you're posting right at the beginning. Because there's a process of 10 days and then they book, then you get the writ and you, or is it the writ? No, they go into court and then we get the writ. And they're going, they can't get in really much before the 22nd. So what that means is we used to be able to evict. A tight eviction would be 30 days, but more than likely by 45, we're now going to see probably evictions go out 60 days.
Wow.
So that's 2 months for owners not getting any kind of compensation on their property. All the more reason why you want somebody that knows how to place good tenants.
Yeah. And I mean, all the more reason to hire a property manager. I mean, I'm an advocate of that because there's a lot more going on there than just putting a tenant in there and collecting rent. All the protected classes, these rules, like you say, read it. My response is, hire someone who does it.
Yeah. Well, and I know there's a lot of self-managing people. You know, I mean, one of the things that we see with this last bill is I think that the eviction rate will go up because, I mean, our rate is probably 1-2%. It's so low in a year. And actually, it's probably less than that. I mean, I don't even do one a year. So it's really low. But we also try to work with our tenants. And now when it's going to take 60 days to get somebody out, it makes it really difficult. Like, this is all, I've always said, don't show leniency. And now even more, don't show leniency. If they're late, I have somebody right now that's self-managing. She came to me. They still haven't paid June rent. She hasn't posted. Today is the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. You probably can't get them out unless you hope that they get out when their lease terminates at the end of the month. And I said, well, I hope they get out. I would have posted on the 2nd. So she's got a lease, a bad lease, and it has a grace period. So she was hosed, she couldn't have done it until the 5th or 6th anyways. So, you know, if you are allowing Legacy Property Management to manage with you, we are covered. We make sure that we are working within the confines and we are protecting our owners. If you work with a different PM company, ensure that they know about these bills and they're protecting you. And this does apply to self-managing owners as well. But the liability of managing properties, and I don't want this to be a discouragement because I'm a huge proponent. I have my own rentals as well. I'm a huge proponent of that concept of, you know, another stream of revenue. But the liability, and we are doing this day in and day out. If you're just kind of hanging back and waiting for money to come in and you've become friends with your tenant, just be really cognizant. Tenants are really, really smart and they know that these laws have passed. So I just want to encourage people to be, you know, cautious with the relationships they develop with their tenants. That's usually what happens first.
So this has been great information. And I mean, hats off to you for sitting through ever how many lawyer sessions you sat through and taking good notes and explaining it in non-lawyer simple terms. So thank you. So a couple follow-up questions on here. I know a lot of the listeners are going to have questions about this, whether it's the laws or this or that in their lease. Are you the right person to reach out to as a lawyer? Who should they talk to for questions regarding properties that they are either self-managing or have with a property manager? Because people have questions on this.
If you have a property manager, then you would probably want to have a conversation with them about what have you done to your contracts to protect me, Mr. Owner, with regard to the new 4 laws. And including, what are you doing to protect me, or how are you screening these? Now, I tell you, if you have a property manager, it's probably pretty likely that the property manager is going to get hit first before the owner.
Okay.
You know, that's why we're supposed to be licensed agents in Colorado. It's why we all have insurance and liability insurance. I hope they do. We do. But if you are a self-managing, then I would think if you are a self-managing owner, you do have an attorney. I hope you have an attorney. I hope you haven't printed something off. The internet leases are probably not covering because they're not specific to Colorado.
Yeah.
So those make me, I still see those come through, you know, the little 3 pagers. That's probably not enough coverage for you. Am I the right person? You know, I'm happy to have a conversation. You know, I'm not an attorney. I just know what we are doing to protect ourselves. And, you know, I've been in a legislative class. I've been with my attorneys. I'm headed to another one next week with another attorney, just to get, and it's all interpretation, I think, too. The 2 largest eviction attorneys in town see things slightly different on these bills and are advising their clients slightly different. Not wrong, just different. And well, that's okay.
I guess we'll see what happens after court cases and the next couple of years come out. And
they'll see what slides is what my contractual attorney says, you know.
He says what?
Well, let's see what slides
what
through.
What slides?
Yeah. You know? That's kind of... It's big. It's pretty important. I was just looking through my notes. So a lot of these bills, the warranty of habitability is effective August 2nd of this year. Bed bugs is effective January 1, 2020. The time to cure, the period of 3 days go now is no longer. That went into effect May 20th. It's already
so
in
last
effect.
Month.
Yep. And the source of income, which has become a protected class, currently, I stand corrected, it is still within the city of Boulder and Denver. January 2020, it goes statewide.
Okay, so statewide beginning of next year.
Right.
Okay.
And I wanted to just mention one other thing that I thought was very, very interesting. It's not on this PowerPoint, but there is a state bill, 19180, that is the Eviction Legal Defense Fund. This is a fund that is allowing free legal and lawyers for tenants. So if you don't have a lawyer, have a lawyer. Because they are getting, tenants are now able to get free legal help.
And that's a recent bill?
Yep, that's coming in. That's one of the new bills.
Okay, that's not one of these big four you mentioned, but just another smaller one.
It was part of the legislative class. I just didn't put that one up there.
Okay.
I mean, my opinion is tenants don't always know what they don't know. But if you can be slightly smarter and slightly, I'm never a property manager that gets overreactionary. I used to be that way. I don't do that anymore. I just pause. If I feel like something is getting my blood boiling, I need to step away and take it from, don't take it from a retaliation standpoint, because you're not going to win that. But really take it from a standpoint of, okay, what makes most sense and what seems best? And be careful, document. I see the biggest fault is self-managing owners do not document appropriately with their conversations with their tenants.
I can totally
believe
that.
Texting is not a good idea. So if you do have a verbal conversation, recap that verbal conversation in an email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We agreed to this. So
that's very good advice. Well, Anne-Marie, thank you for putting this together and coming out and talking this for, well, like 40 some minutes or so. I appreciate it, and our listeners do. And I got to give you a plug, because I lean on you to help me run rents and walk through some properties, and you've been wonderful about that.
Thank you.
So if you're an agent out there, she might be a good person to become friends with. If you're an investor out there, I definitely recommend reaching out to her as well, because she knows her stuff and she's on top of it. And one thing I like about it, you hustle and you push rents, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So you can be reached at your website. Here's www.legacypmco.com. And I assume this is your office phone number, 720-445-9515.
Yep.
And I'll put those, her contact details, in the show notes so you guys can reach out to her as well. So, Anne-Marie, thank you so much.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.